So first, let's just frame the Seder night. This might be basic. But then again, a lot of what we're going to be discussing is basic anyways. So Seder night, first of all, let's appreciate on Pesach, we are not commemorating the fact that we were a very important incident in our history, that we had been slaves, we went out to freedom, and this is the time of year to commemorate that. It's much, much, much more than that. And I think this is probably Pashut, but let's go through it anyways in order to properly frame it. Pesach is the Chag of Emunah. Pesach is where we are on the fundamental, basic level, meeting Hashem, being introduced to Hashem. The whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim was about Hashem introducing himself to us. Hashem manipulated it all in the first place. Us going into Mitzrayim, going into the Avdus, because Hashem wanted us, because the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim was the Hashem's way of creating the Jewish people. We've often illustrated that with the Kuzari. The Kuzari says that in the beginning of the Kuzari, when the non-Jewish king is meeting the Jewish Chacham right at the beginning of their discussion, and he tells him, tell me about your faith. Tell me about your faith. And the Chacham says, we believe in the Hashem who took us out of Mitzrayim, and he split the sea, and he sustained us in the desert. And the Kuzari king responds unimpressed. He says, that's a pathetic answer. He says, I'm asking you what you believe. I'm asking you about your God. You should tell me that you believe in the God who created the entire universe, who maintains the entire universe, the master of the sun, the master of all the awesome heavenly bodies. Are you talking about some specific incident? Yes, these were miracles. But you're talking about, you're very much limiting the scope of your God by saying that you believe in the God who gave you breakfast. Again, there's obviously more than that, but it's very specific national experiences. And the Kuzari, the Chacham, answers very profoundly. And he says, you asked me, what is our faith? I gave you the basis of our faith. He says, certainly our Hashem created the world. But that's not the basis, meaning we weren't there. We didn't see it. Where does our relationship with Hashem come from? Our relationship comes from the fact that he introduced himself to us, that we met him. That is the basis of our emunah. Once we met him, we also understand that this is the Hashem who created the universe. But we met him. And where did he introduce himself to us? He introduced himself to us at Yetzias Mitzrayim. Very Shimshon Pinkus puts it. You may have heard me say this in the past. The way Shimshon Pinkus puts it is that it was like a shidduch. When a young man wants to propose marriage to a young woman, so she wants to know mainly two things about him. She wants to know, first of all, who are you? What are you about? And second of all, she wants to know, what are your feelings towards me? But she wants to know who he is. He can love her, he can care for her, but if he's a lowlife, good for nothing, she won't want to marry him. On the other hand, so therefore, she needs to know who he is. On the other hand, he can be a top quality person. He can be the most successful person in the world, most able person in the world, most quality person in the world. But if he really doesn't care at all about her, again, it's not going to work. She won't want to marry him. But these are the two things that a young woman is going to want to know when this young man wants to propose marriage to her. So Shimshon Pinkus says that when Hashem came to Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai and Kiviyachol proposed marriage, what does he tell them? He tells them, Atem Re'isem Asher Osisim in Mitzrayim. You saw what I did in Mitzrayim. There is where you have both answers to your question. Sorry, there's where you have the answers to both of those questions. In Mitzrayim, Hashem was going through the Shidduch process. And it was there that he was showing us, who he is. That's number one. And number two, his care for us. Where Hashem came and smashed to pieces the mightiest empire in the world and completely subdued and disgraced the most powerful king in the world. But not just that, how he also tore apart and brought down to their knees the greatest forces of the universe in the course of the Makkos. So Hashem is saying, here you see what, who I am. This was Hashem's way of showing, demonstrating to us who he is and his care for us. And this was the basis of everything else. Everything else followed from this. And that's why the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, is so fundamental, right? You have to be doing it twice a day, touching on it twice a day to keep it alive in our minds all the time. And once a year, that super that super injection. So when we're sitting down at the Leila Seder, we are sitting down to once again be introduced to Hashem, to allow Hashem Kiviyachol to introduce himself to us again by reliving the experiences, by bringing them to life, by trying to go through them again in the best way we can. That's what we're trying to do in the Leila Seder. And we'll talk in terms of what you're trying to convey to your children at the Seder, but let's understand that it's interchangeable with what are we trying to impress upon ourselves? What is it that we're trying to really experience? Alter of Kelm said, "Klamar b'lesaper b'yitzias Mitzrayim, hareze mishubach." Oh, mishubach means praiseworthy, right? He said, no, mishubach is Miloshen Shvach Kalkoes, quality. Reza Meshubach means the person becomes more and more of a quality man. The more you can contemplate, the more you can experience, contemplate, internalize, and appreciate more and more the experience of Metzias Mitzrayim, the more of a quality yid you are. Oh, very good. You're having a good deal here. At the Zeh is going on the person. This person is Meshubach. The person who's capable of doing that. So, but let's appreciate this further. So this is what we're sitting down at the Leila Seder to do. To experience that. But let's appreciate it a bit further. Hashem set it up very deliberately. And either later or perhaps in the sequel that I hope to do, Bezos Hashem, we'll go through it in more detail. Right now, I don't think we're going to really move through the whole Maisa. But let's see. Whatever the case is, so we know what happened. Right, we were in the lowest place, in the depths of despair, not thinking that anybody can help us. And Hashem appeared on the scene, and Parah is cynical, right? And Parah says, "Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Koyloi." And it's okay. It's very tempting to really throw myself into the full elaboration of it now, but I'm going to try to overcome that temptation and just cut through it quickly in order to still focus on the bigger picture now and then get back into the particulars again either later tonight or next time. But He says, Me Hashem Asher Eshma B'Koilim. Beautiful. That's what Hashem was waiting for. Meaning, Paroi, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Paroi and says, you should know that the Jews have a God. Say that. The Jews are the very, very bottom cogs of the pyramid, excuse the pun, of the Mitzrayim was a great caste system. It was a very, very well oiled, it was the most advanced kingdom. If you think about Eretz Canaan, was a backward land with, you know, a whole bunch of different small kingdoms, basically a nomadic matziv, whereas Mitzrayim was one massive, cohesive empire, right, which was all under the iron fist of one ruler and was the cutting edge of basically everything in those days. So Moshe comes and says, you should know that the Ivrim have a God. He wants them to come out and serve him. Pari says, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Koilo. Pari is not impressed. Every nation has their gods. He doesn't necessarily deny it. But I have nothing to, I can face off against anybody because I have the most, look what I've built up. You know, that reflects the fact I have the most powerful battery of gods. I have the cutting edge in terms of the Mechashvim, etc., which was really at the, that was the forefront of controlling Teva, of having things where you wanted them to be. And Paroi, with his battery of gods, and he considered himself, I think, the captain of the team of gods, and Chartumim, etc., invincible. What force can take him on? Sure, other nations have gods. I have them have their god, and the Midianim have their god. You want to tell me that they have a god? Shkoyach, no problem. You know, I can contend with that. So he says, "Mi Hashem, Hashem Shma B'Koyle." Who is Hashem? And Hashem's response to that is very good. That's exactly the question I was waiting for, because this is what I want to show. Mi Hashem, but I'm going to do it on your back. Really, you're not the one I want to be showing. I want to be showing my children who I am. And then I'm going to skip the elaboration that I hope to get to later. But by the time Hashem is done, right? Paroi says, I'm ready to take him on. Paroi says, I'm ready to take him on. And Hashem accepts the challenge. And basically what happens after that is you have this almighty emperor who is basically being slammed from all directions. He has two black eyes, a bloody nose, and Hashem is playing cat and mouse with him. Amish. It slams him to the floor, and Hashem basically picks him up like this, puts him back at the negotiating table, and he's alalti b'Mitzrayim. And meanwhile, step by step by step, Hashem is showing quite how in control of everything he is. Starting from the Egyptian gods, how nothing they are, and then moving on to the greatest forces of nature. Mitzrayim. The world, more importantly, the Bnei Yisrael, are looking on. You know, it starts open-mouthed, and then the open mouth gets wider and wider and wider as they're seeing what's going on here. A completely new, you know, being introduced to a new concept of Elokei HaElohim. And just watching in awe and in shock as it's unfolding, another step and another step. And another step, culminating further and further and further. So by the time this process is finished, everyone is just watching in trepidation. And the Bnei Yisrael are walking around. Now Hashem is showing not just who he is, but he's also making another point. Those underdogs, the despicable race, those are my people. Those are the Bnei Kel Chai. Those are the princes of the universe. That's the second point that he's making. And this was no less of a revelation. If I had a slap in the face for the Egyptians, besides the Makkah itself, was that Hashem is not interested in the master race, in the glorious Egyptian people. He's not interested in them. He's interested in the Bnei Yisrael. This was a shock, a slap in the face to the Egyptians. But it was also a shock to the Bnei Yisrael. By the time this process is finished, and again, I hope to get back to the process, but the Bnei Yisrael are walking around in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is devastated. Mitzrayim is decimated by now. You have to really appreciate that it wasn't like a Makkah was finished, and the next day the sun, okay, Makkah's Dam is finished, and now the next day the sun is up and shining brightly, and everything is back to normal. They had to contend with the effects of the Makkah after it finished, right? Mitzrayim was in pieces, mamish in shambles. But Victor Miller points out that by the time the Bnei Yisrael left, Mitzrayim was so destroyed that it takes centuries. They're in the backyard of Eretz Yisrael. It takes centuries, if you move through Nach, before you start hearing from Mitzrayim again. All the neighboring nations you start hearing about. You hear about Canaan, you hear about Moab, right? You hear about Midian, you hear about they start running into problems. The Plishtim, Mitzrayim takes a long time until they start raising their head again. The devastation was so complete. And now the Bnei Yisrael, by the time the process is finished, the Bnei Yisrael are walking around with their noses in the air. And the Mitzrayim are considering it lucky, good luck, to be able to have a stake with whatever Jews they can, right? They wanted to be giving of their things to the Bnei Yisrael. We're all used to the idea, to the understanding that the Erev Rav were a very problematic phenomenon in our history. But you have to step back for a minute and just understand the phenomenon itself. With the Erev Rav, these were many of the Mitzrayim who said, we want to join these people. It wasn't good for us. But go back to the Etzem concept. This is a reflection of what was going on then at that time. So, when we come back to relive these experiences, we're supposed to not just do it. The big theme is Derech Srora V'Cheirus, where we want to be sitting in a way that expresses freedom, but not just freedom. Srora. Srora means majesty. Meaning, this is very, very fundamental. We are not just expressing the fact that we are free now, right? We're not a slave race that the chains were taken off our legs and I was still wearing our tattered pants. By the time we left Mitzrayim, we left as princes, Biyad Ramah, right? And Mitzrayim are just head over heels to try to pile things onto us. So when we sit down at the Leil HaSeder, we're supposed to be experiencing this also. We are sitting down now as the Bnei Melachim, as the Bnei Kelchoy, as princes, Derecherus v'srara. V'srara, we want to emphasize the srara part because the cherus is the pashtus, the freedom aspect. But we want to emphasize the srara part, the majesty part. This is how we sit down at the Leil HaSeder, right? At the Leil HaSeder, we're encouraged. The place can tell us, make it as the table as extravagant as you can make it. Make it as extravagant as you can make it. Any fancy utensils that you have a use for at the Seder, put out there. Even though, Mishabura stresses, that generally throughout the year, we're discouraged from displaying extravagance. We're not the Leil HaSeder. In fact, there's a famous Ma'aril that's part of Mishnah Berurah, that even if he had mashkoinis, if he had collateral that he was holding on to, it wasn't even his, but fancy utensils, he would put them out on the table. Because again, we are experiencing that srara. So basically, the primary 2 points that we want to be bringing home at the Seder is, Avigdor Miller said that the Torah basically boils down to 3 fundamental points. The 3 primary lessons of the Torah is number 1, Hashem. That Bereishis Bara Elokim Hashamayim V'Sa'ot. Number 2 is Bnei Bechori Yisrael. That's number 2. Atem Tiuli La'eh Mamleches Kanim V'Goy Kadosh. Sgula Mikolam that we are Hashem's people. That is Yesod number two of the Torah. And Yesod number three of the Torah is that we maintain this relationship through the Torah, through the mitzvahs of the Torah, by serving Hashem. So these 3 points are the points of the Leil HaSeder. The first two are getting more attention, but the third one also comes into play significantly. But right now, let's give the main attention to the first two. That, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, right, the answer to me, Hashem, right? We want to approach the Leil HaSeder with, we want to spend tonight answering the question of me, Hashem. That's what we want to be experiencing, and experiencing the B'nai B'chayr Yisrael. And this is what the Leil HaSeder is hammering home. Now, just to add a point to round out this stage of the discussion. Rabbi Lapian quoted one of the Gedolim of Keln, who used to start his Leil HaSeder every time by saying, he would say, how do I know how to make a Leil HaSeder? How do I know how to conduct a Seder? Well, I for many years I sat at my father's table. How does he know how to do it? For many years he sat at his father's table. Where did it start from? It goes back to the Leil HaSeder that was actually in Mitzrayim. Now, this might not work for everybody in the most straightforward sense. We have Bali Tshuva, we have people who joined up later in life, but nevertheless, I don't think that there's anybody in existence who made a Leil HaSeder out of Mishnah Berurah, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, or even the handbook to Leil HaSeder. What's that? Right. I don't think there's anybody who sat down and did it out of a book. Even if you have people who rejoined later in life, they sat at Snarn. I don't think that there's any Seder that you can trace back to a vacuum. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not going to say this. They can trace back to a vacuum, meaning he learned how to do it and he made a Leil HaSeder. Right? It's sat at Snarn. Ultimately, it all connects back to, this is the epitome of Messiah. It's the epitome of Messiah. Since that first night in Mitzrayim, we've been reliving the experience year after year, and we're still carrying that momentum. And to appreciate that this is one of the most fundamental places where we constitute a chain in that Masaira. And we'll note that Hashem set it up in a very deliberate way. When Hashem was bringing the Matzah and Mitzrayim to its climax, Hashem tells the B'nai Yisrael, I want you to be sitting at home. Right? I want you to be sitting at home with a very specific blend of foods, aromas. Right? I'm going to be sitting at home with roasted lamb. Roasted lamb, the truth is I've never actually tasted it. I imagine it's good. And that the aroma is savory. And you have matzah, which has its own distinct taste. You have maror, which has its aroma and taste. Very distinct. Very distinct. And there's a lot of, there is an effect on the nefesh here. We all have an association with the Leil HaSeder, right? There's an ambiance of the Leil HaSeder that we all have a very powerful association with. But if you can try to picture, you know, you're familiar with the concept of association. That let's say you were being beaten up in a room where there was fresh paint. Okay? Fresh paint has a strong smell. Okay? So for a while after that, whenever you smell fresh paint, you're going to grimace. I should give other examples. Let's say you heard a great piece of news when there was fresh paint. but you know, I said a few times from my own personal experience that I was once on Leil Shabbos at home when I was about 10 years old. I was lying on the couch during the Suda reading a very scary book. Very scary book. And my father was in the middle of a tune of Mayididus, when I got to a point in the book that I just couldn't continue. And I just had to close the book and not continue. My father was in the middle of singing my Yedidus. And since then, for a long time, I could not bear to hear that tune. I couldn't bear to hear that tune. It brought me right back to the pachad of, this is the reality of association, of that book. My father couldn't sing that song for like a year. So Hashem set up a very distinct setting, right? You can try to picture the next year when the Bnei Yisrael sat down again, the next time that they sat down again, for that combination, the ones were actually there, right? They were transported straight back to the experience in a very, very live way. And just the enthusiasm and the passion came pouring forth. And, okay, we don't have that actual natural association. But this is what we're trying to affect here. This is what we're trying to affect here. Okay. So now we've laid down this setting. We've discussed the same, we've framed the Seder, what we're trying to do in a general way. And what I want to do now is try to first just move through the Seder quickly. Do I prefer that we move to the other side, or how are we doing here? What's that? Oh, okay, but let's just go right there. Should we move to the back corner? What's that? Okay, yeah, we'll move over. Before, so not to hurt anybody's feelings.
What?
I said I should have thought of it before, so it's not to offend everybody, but okay. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I have plenty. So what I still want to do now is I think I've reached this point, tying this up. What I want to do now is Bezal Hashem quickly move through the Seder, touch on different points without making a stop at Magid. And then to back up and actually do an overview of Magid, and then perhaps to go through the actual process of Yetzias Mitzrayim in more detail. So I'm just going to touch on different parts, just in terms of fitting things into this theme now that we're discussing here. Just basic things that you would want to bring home, articulate with the children, or like we said before, to be impressing it on yourself. When you get to Yachatz, now there's a lot to be said about Kaddish, Karpas, etc. But I want to specifically focus on this particular focus we're discussing now. When you get to Yachatz, you're going to be breaking the matzah in half. So you want to bring out, well, first of all, to appreciate. Part of what we're trying to do here is, and this is a more challenging part of the Leila Seder, is the Poischim Bignus, Mesayimim Bishvach. The more we can try to relate to the experience of Oini, of Avdus, the more we can appreciate the Chayus. That's what the Maror is about, right? And that's also why in the Haggadah we spend time on the Inui. Not easy, because we never actually experienced it. But it's Kedai, perhaps, to try to put some thought in beforehand. This is perhaps one of the areas that requires the most creativity. The truth is that picturing the Makkos itself is something that requires thought beforehand to really try to bring to life in your own mind. But this is something that requires a little bit of imagination. But it could be done, meaning to really try to imagine the Inui, the poverty, the affliction, the oppression, in order to be able to appreciate being out of it. There's no question that anybody, Rachman al-Tzlan, was in any such situation, whether it's survivors or whatever it is, were able to really go back in their mind and to relive where they were and their thoughts of no hope for a future, and then to move forward to where they are now, makes the experience that much more powerful. So by Yachatz, you are, well, first of all, the experience of Yachatz. You're breaking the bread, like, try to think of the refugees who have food with them, and they're not sure how much longer, when the next time they're going to get food is. And they want to give out a meal to their family, right? But they have to make a cheshbon of, what's the minimum I can give to stave off the hunger right now, but I still would like to save as much as I can for the next time I'll need it. I don't know when the next time is going to be. We break the matzah for the purpose of, well, we're kind of doing a dual purpose, but we want to have a broken piece of matzah at Moitzi Matzah. Lechem oini. We want to experience the oini, right? And therefore, you're breaking it at Yachatz. There's a lot of that contrast at the table. Matzah, it's hard to call it poor man's bread today. You pay a hefty sum for it, unless you want to say Hashem Seifa after you've paid the money. What's that? So, Beitzos Yamtiv, don't do that. but when you have, if you really think about it, you have on the table, like we said before, extravagantly set, and you have these very coarse-looking breads, right? Things in the middle, which is. My son just went to one of these petting zoos where they have all the different activities, right? They bake pitas there. You can imagine, we're talking about 7-year-old skill. And he came home with something that looks like matzahs, right? I told him that I want to eat it. And what? So it bats him. Again, we have the association. Baruch Hashem, we have the association. We don't sense it that way, but try to sense it that way. That there's a certain stira in that bread sitting prominently in the middle of your luxuriously set table. And that coarse-looking matzahs. Lechem oini. You want to go back to try to get into the mindset of what it was like in order to then appreciate where we actually are now. And Hadarabba, yeah, we're bringing ourselves back when we're sitting in that glory, in that srara, and putting those matzahs back on the table, to try to say, this is really where we were. Imagine eating this day after day. Eat it on Pesach, it's geschmack. It's geschmack. But if you were to eat it day after day, it would get arduous. So when you at Yachatz, you're breaking it apart, you say, we're going to try to feel now like the person who has to break apart his meal, his foods, because he doesn't know. Okay, if you can try to bring that to life a little bit, again, like we said, in your own mind, toward the kids, you say, I'm going to put some away, I want to hide it, you know, we're going to need this later. Now, Magid, so we're behesseva by the Dalit Kaisis, by eating the matzah, apikoymen, by the Suda also, but not by the Agada. The Agada, you're not supposed to say Be'esei. You're supposed to say Be'ema u'be'yira. And it's Kedai. You know what? I wish I had the Nusuch here in front of me, but if you email me, I'll believe as I send it to you, there's a very powerful piece of Zoya that's Kedai. I don't know if you're not going to read it out at the Seder, but to preface it for yourself, to look at it beforehand, where he describes the Ma'amad of Hashem coming with this Pamali of Malachim to be present when his children are going to tell the story of what he did for them. And he's there, and he's Kiviyachol reveling in your Sipur, and he's showing it off to that whole Pamali of Malachim that are with him there. This is how the Zohar sets it up. And Tak, it says in the Pesach, that's why at the Leila, when we're sitting at Magid, sitting at Shulchan HaMelech, We want to be sitting be'imo b'yiro, and really doing our best to show Hashem kiviyachol that we appreciate what He did, and we're going to try to really connect ourselves and our children to it in the most powerful way possible. Now, what I'll say right now about Magid, before we back up, probably not tonight anymore, but before we back up and go through it a little bit more in detail, right? Not in detail, but as an overview, is to understand that Magid is not a haphazard collection of Ma'amori Chazal, of drushes. There is a very clear, organized structure to Magid. I'll just say very briefly right now that we first, you know, with Avodim Mayinu, Halach Ma'ani and Avodim Mayinu, we're kind of setting the tone, just like we did at the beginning. You're setting the tone. You're giving the overview of what is our agenda tonight. Okay? What's that? Then the next part of the Haggadah,
like an introduction or the preface.
That's right. Right. It's a preface. It's an introduction. Then the next part, the Ma'amorim that then follow, right? Where it tells about the Chachamim sitting and telling the story all night. And then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah talking about how you're supposed to say it, figuring out what the Makar is that you're supposed to say it twice a day. And then our Baal Banim is all bringing home how fundamental Yetzias Mitzrayim is. Let's realize that. This is not, again, al-panav, it looks like a haphazard collection of Ma'amarim about Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's not what it is. It's the preamble to the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim is with a number of Ma'amarim bringing home how critical of a mitzvah it is. That's how we are prefacing the Sefer. And then we move on to the next stage of Yochel Me'erish Chodesh. Yochel Me'erish Chodesh is bringing home the next stage. We talked about Yetzias Mitzrayim in general, but how much weight Hashem put on doing it precisely tonight. In this setting, Hashem said, I want it to take place. And then you go on to Mitchilo Oved Avod Zorah HaYavaseinu, which, as we said before, is backing up. And we are talking about the whole process of how Hashem took on himself, kiviyachol, the project of turning us into his people. We're going all the way back to before Avraham Avinu in order to tell the story of how Hashem singled us out from among millions of mankind and latched onto us, pulled us to him, the kavana l'avodasai, and showing the process of Hashem turning us into the Am Hashem. Okay, and then we have the next shlavim of talking about the Shibud and the Inui, and then moving into where Hashem appears on the scene. We go through the Makas, etc. And again, try to touch on that perhaps a little bit more elaborated next time. Now, to go weiter. After telling the story, we culminate with Kol Shalom Ashlish Advarim Elo Yetzir Bechoy Vosim, right? Pesach Matzo Mara. Here, we're bringing home the third point that we mentioned before, that this has to translate into Avodah. It has to translate into Avodah. Right? We're focusing on Hashem's introduction of himself to us. We're focusing on Hashem taking us close to him. But it has to immediately connect to what Hashem wants of us as a result. And right, we already make reference to that back with the Ben Rasha, right? That Mishvil Zeh also Hashem libitzesim in Mitzrayim. Hashem did it because he wanted this avodah. The Rasha is coming and saying, "Hi, what is this all about? Let's just sit down and enjoy. Why all the detail? Why all the bother? Why all the dikduk?" Okay, then we get to the matzah. So the matzah, we want to experience, we want to appreciate eating the matzah. So first of all, of course, like we said before, there's the lechem ayini. But matzah is not just lechem ayini. In fact, the aspect of the matzah commemorating the Avdus is a chiddush of the Rishonim. Not what it says in the Psukim, right? Lechem Oini, it says. But it says, he pulls in Yotzel Sami Mitzrayim, Lehispik Tzekon Shalav Yisrael Lahachmitz. Rav Hirsch has a whole piece about that, of how it is both sides of the coin. How the very Oini, Hashem said, hey, watch how I'm going to turn this into your sign of Cheirus. But whatever the case is, the Maharal Amayis is kaifer in the whole business. He says that he disagrees with the Rishonim who say that it's a zechet to the Abdus Bechlal. He has his take on Lechem Oini, but he says Matzah is only manifesting the Cheirus. But okay, we're going to leave that aside right now. But we want to experience what the Matzah is. A, well, love dafke A and B, but it's a Lechem Oini, right? But also as the Lechem of Cheirus. As the Lechem that shows how Hashem rushed to take us out, but also more than that. The Matzah is a very, very great manifestation of our own dedication to Hashem. We've said a few times the Or HaChaim, right? There's a famous kasha. I think I already said this three times in the last week. I don't remember who I said it to, who I said it to where, but there's the famous kasha of we say that it's a zeche to the fact that they had to, where did the matzah come from? They had to rush out so fast that the dough didn't manage to rise. And Hashem commanded them to make matzah the night before they were rushing anywhere. Right? Everybody asks this question. Everybody asks this kasha. Or HaChaim says as follows. Or HaChaim says, on the contrary, it's not a zecher in the sense of something happened and we're commemorating it, but actually it's a cause. Hashem told us, I'm introducing you to a new level of avodah now. The avodah of making matzahs. You're going to a matzah bakery. Right, we've discussed this, how the making of the matzahs is representative of the whole system of avodah Hashem. You can't make matzahs lethargically. You can't make matzahs approximately. You can't kind of sit back and just kind of whatever without paying attention to detail. You got to be fast, energetic, a lot of attention to detail, precision. Everything has to be just so. And this is the symbol of the way our mitzvahs are supposed to look in general. Mitzvah b'liotcha al tachmitzena. Don't let it turn into chametz. Do it with energy, speed, precision. Don't let it become chametz. All mitzvahs. So Rav Chaim says, Hashem told the Bnei Yisrael, you make matzahs. Go through the avodah of the zrizus of making matzahs, and you will see me responding in the same way. The matzah and the speed that Hashem took us out are intertwined. They're cause and effect and cause and effect. Cause and effect.
It's like I need you to do this in order to prepare yourselves the same way that sort of the pestle with the blood.
Yes.
For 4 days, you need to have this sad and put the blood on the mashko.
In order to put yourself in position.
To yourself, to master yourself to be able to receive
exactly
this goodness.
That's right. It says, Adarabba, that's going to activate that midah in Shemayim. You're gonna display that energy, that speed. And that will activate that midah in Shemayim. And I will do the same, reflecting exactly what you did the night before. And then you'll be rushed out so fast that you don't want to have a chance to be machmetz. You'll have the same matzahs that you yourself made deliberately the night before. Note, Pesach Mitzrayim, it wasn't dinner for chametz. They were allowed to have chametz already the next day. They could have made bread. Just like he's been taking the hachmitz, and they rushed to make proper matzah the night before. As a result, Hashem said, "I'm going to show you how I rush, and now your bread is not going to be maspik lahachmitz." So, eating matzah, you are eating dedication, right? All of our food, all kosher food. You're eating kosher meat, kosher chicken. You're talking about food that's been processed with a lot of diktuk halacha. You know, it's Yisrael if you're eating fruits and vegetables. But matzah is the epitome of that. I don't think that there's any other food that requires so much that what you have before you is baked avodas Hashem. Right? And this is what you're eating. That's what the matzah is called. It's bread of emunah. Rabbi Yerucham Avavit says, beautiful Lashonis. He says, matzah turns you into a bria chadasha. You are eating dedication to Hashem and you're bringing it into your limbs. And I'll make another point. Not all of us actually make matzahs. I'm one of the not all of us. Every year I think about it like excitedly anew, and I haven't gotten there yet. But we said before, we don't know how much you pay for the matzahs. There's a lot of significance to that. We don't actually go through the sweat. But you know what? The money that you put into your matzahs, later, consider that. These are not technicalities. This is dedication. The money that you put into Yom Tov in general is an end and a value in and of itself. It's important to appreciate that. That deserves its own shmooz. But I'm just saying that now, if we didn't actually go through the sweating, the activity of making the matzahs, it's there. But also, yes, appreciate the fact that, I think I quoted, what did I quote this to? Maybe last week's vow, I'm not sure. But the Shulchan Aruch, the Tanya, this is about Stoka. Yeah, that he says how every mitzvah is ma'ale, a different part of your body, and he says that tzedakah is ma'ale the whole thing, because tzedakah is money produced by every fiber of your being that you put into making it, the efforts that you put into making that money, you put your whole neshama into it, and therefore what you then do with that money is ma'ale every fiber of your being. So here we're talking about weiter. Once again, we're not skimping. We're spending good money on getting mahuta de kamatzes, and so vaito. We're coming back to the point. Now, I kind of added that twist, but the basic point is this understanding that matzah, in its very essence, before even coming on to the deeper significance of it, just plain, factual, the history of that matzah that's on your table, is this is matzah that embodies intense dedication to Hashem. It's the food that carries the greatest level of intense diktuk halacha dedication to Hashem. Believe that we're going until 9:15, just so you know. Yesh tikva l'achriseinu. Okay. So experience that, appreciate that when you're eating the matzah. Appreciate the diktuk halacha in eating the matzah, right? The matzah is also one of the most complex part of halacha of the Seder. Right? From making the brachas until actually eating it, right? You pick up all three, you make hamoitzi, you drop the bottom one, you make alachilas matzah, you take a kezayis from both, you try to get both kezayisim into your mouth and have them all chewed, then you swallow one at a time. It has to be tachkidei achilas pras. I just want to make a note in parentheses about that. It doesn't have to be a marathon, because a kedei achilas pras, if you're going with the standard 4 minutes, does not start from when you stop putting the matzah into your mouth. It doesn't start from when you're chewing either. It starts from when you start swallowing it. You can chew benachas. There's a lot of chewing to do if you're doing both kazesim at once. But you can chew benachas. It doesn't have to be that it's not kedel chachila. But you can chew benachas, and then you want to swallow if you can. The swallowing to kedel chachilas pras, once it's all chewed up, is really not an asik. Whatever the case is, what's that? Pack it in like that, right. Whatever the case is, this is also eating. The very eating of the matzah is a replay of the diktuk of the dedication that was manifest in the making of the matzahs. So bear that in mind also. We are immediately translating. We are internalizing Anochi Hashem. We're internalizing B'nei B'chayr Yisrael, I'm Segula, and we are not losing any time. We're not waiting for Shavuos in translating that into Avoida. The Seder is packed with Avoida, right? That's what gets the Russia irked, the Ben Russia. That's what he gets all from about. What's with Simchas Yom Tov? So the Rishonim say there. So to appreciate that. We have the Mara. Okay, we already talked about the concept of trying to go back to the Matzav of Oini. I'm not going to spend much time on that. Kairich is just another beautiful example of our dedication to Hashem's Avodah, right? What are we trying to do? Kairich, what is Kairich Be'etzem? Kairich is you want to be Choshish to another Shita, right? I was Yaitse according to the main Shita, but you know what? I want to be Yaitse according to another Shita also. Right? Shulchan Aruch I'll just throw in parentheses that I kind of think of this perhaps as the most challenging halacha of the Leila Seder, not to eat too much in Shulchan Aruch, so that you still can eat the afikoman with an appetite. You know, by the time you reach Shulchan Aruch, you just want to, okay, sit down and just enjoy the soup and the knedlach and the, I don't want to offend any non-gebrucht people, but weed gebrucht. And the egg noodles, etc. The suda, you already want to, if you can actually be conscious then of being medactic in that din also, not eating too much, which is why the Mishnah Berurah cautions, if you go with the minig of eating the eggs, don't overdo it. You don't have to be medactic on the biggest shiurim. You want to leave room for afikoyman. Afikoyman, okay. I don't want to spend time on that. Zeicher to the Achilas Korban Pesach. What's that? The afikoyman, okay. The kids will spend time on it. Even though everything here deserves elaboration, when we get to Hallel, just to appreciate the moment. Really, it starts at suffering, but appreciate the moment of you're at Chatzos. This was the moment you are saying the same Hallel that Bnei Yisrael said then in Mitzrayim. They went up on the rooftops at the moment of Chatzos. At the moment of Chatzos, when Makas Bechiris hit, and they went up on the rooftops, and they looked out, and that's it. Mitzrayim was completely down; they were completely up, and now was when they said, "This actually, really, this particular parak was actually said back at the end of Magid." But Hallel, okay, you're saying the Hallel of the Leil Shimurim, just that appreciation. We would hope that we would get to a place that by the time we're saying Hallel, after having been through the Seder, the Hallel is really just an outpouring of our emotions. Levi Gamila said that Hallel is related to the world. These all the different terms, right? Shevach and Hallel and Zimra and all the different terms. Each one has its specific connotation. Hallel is related to the word Yilola. Hallel is just, you can be, it's also related to the word Hallelus. Yilola means to wail. Hallelus means to just go wild. Hallel means just a yelling with enthusiasm. Now, we actually put words to it. But the term Hallel is versus Shevach, which is more of a deliberate, you're working out an articulation of your appreciation. The Shabeach.
What are the Lashonos of Shvarim? Gnus Eganach, what's the other one?
Yilula Yola, the wailing, that's right. So it's like wailing. A person is not sitting down now to put in, a person who's wailing is not sitting down now to put into precise terms what exactly is the pain that he's feeling now. He's just yelling with pain. Hallel is just to yell with enthusiasm. Think of a person who just heard that he won the lottery. He jumps up and yells. He's not saying, oh, how great is this day that I have come to see. He's not saying any of that. He just gets up and yells, right, with his fist in the air. So we're doing this. Just we're doing it with words. But we want to get to a place that we're ready to do this. We want to feel that we're in that place. Chatzos in Mitzrayim, standing on the rooftops and just crying out that with that enthusiastic outpouring of Hallel Tasha. Okay, just to briefly put into perspective, Nirtza is not piyutim. Nirtza, really, the significance of the shlav of Nirtza is the din of that a person is chayiv to be oisik in yitzias Mitzrayim, al sheyach tofen u'shem. It's a din that you have to continue being misaper in yitzias Mitzrayim, al sheyach tofen u'shem, until you fall asleep. We do this with the piyutim. We do this with the piyutim, but to be really appreciate, realize that it's a kiyum of this inyan. The piyutim are basically expressing the shvachim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that's the inyan. You're not coming to be mekayim. This din of continuing to be Isaac and Yitzias Mitzrayim. And if you can, not if you can, this is the din of the Shulchan Aruch, that continue doing it. Read things, tell things, learn things of these in Yanim. until you actually start nodding off. And so on the one hand, the Briskerov would point out that it's ironic that staying up on Lil Shavuos, everybody does, while Lil Pesach is a real din of the Gemara. It's not just a minute. But on the other hand, I'll just note that the din of the Gemara is not to be up all night. You don't have to push yourself. As soon as you start nodding off, right, on Lil Shavuos, we push ourselves to go up, wash your face, take a coffee, and go weiter. But here, once you start nodding off, you have been the kind of Indian. But if you could really get into it, then it could really be very a gishmak and powerful. That's, by the way, when they stress at Shulchan Aruch not to eat too much so that you don't lose your appetite for the afikoman, also says not to drink too much, even though then you can already drink freely, so as not to become too drowsy and come at the expense of being the supper afterwards. Okay, we've moved through the Seder. Bli Neder next time. Not sure when that will be. I would like to schedule it next time to actually move a little bit more in a blow-by-blow way through the Haggadah and perhaps get a little bit more into the particulars of the process of Yitzias Mitzrayim Bli Neder. In any event, it should be a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. There's a session. Thank you.